We begin with Jonah Carrier, the Sportsnet MLB analyst, who I thought might have retired. I thought your work was done, Jonah, after you got Tim Raines into the Hall of Fame single-handedly. I figured that was it. But welcome. Thanks for joining us on this day. And give me the fallout from that. What's happened since then in terms of Expos fans? Because he did mention your name in the speech. And have you talked to Tim? Any of that stuff just to put a nice bow on Tim Raines' great weekend?
Sure. You're never, ever going to get me to take credit for it. Not ever. Not if you get me drunk and stoned. Not ever. I mean, he had a wonderful career and that's that, and I'm super happy for him, and he's a lovely man. I've gotten to know him a little bit. It's great. We have been in touch here and there. I've met his wife and kids, who are lovely. I mean, it's when you grow up rooting for somebody, Gretzky, whoever it is, and you meet them as an adult, it's really gratifying when they're not jerks. You know what I mean? And they can be
so
jerks.
True.
Like, people are jerks. It's okay. But he just happens to be a really nice man. It's just lovely smile, and just like his fun-loving, cool guy. And so from my perspective, it was just nice to meet his family and meet his friends. It's just like, this is what it means for his extended circle. So that's pretty much the bottom line. Yeah, I was there. Yeah, he mentioned me in the speech. But, yeah, I mean, the dude was a monster of a player, just a terrific player. I just kind of observed it from the sidelines. It was great.
Let me ask you this. When you did meet his friends, were they and his family, were they grateful to you? I mean, Tim made the point, but he was kind of off the radar Hall of Fame-wise. You made it a point of expressing to people why he shouldn't be off the radar, and where's extended family and things? Were they aware of your contribution?
We didn't really get into it that way. I don't know. I think because I'm a journalist, maybe I'm more of a listener, but I kind of asked them about them and, you know, how do you know Tim and then all that stuff. So it wasn't so much that I guess you'd say his attorney, this guy named Randy Grossman, him I've gotten to know pretty well. He and I were in touch throughout every part of the way. I did some kind of meet. It's kind of weird because, it's a little close. Like, I did a kind of a long-form special on Sportsnet with Tim and all that, and we sat in a room with a fake fireplace and all that. So I was sort of being a journalist but also involved a little bit on the inside. So Randy and I were just connected the whole time, and he would always talk, he'd say, wow, gee, you're doing this and this. But other than that, I tried not to – I don't even remember whether or not somebody brought it up, but if they did, I wanted to swat it away. Like, it wasn't, the guy needs to be acknowledged. My ego is just fine. I don't need any of that stuff. And also just, and frankly, there was a whole movement, statistics started changing. The voter rolls started changing. There were these cranky dudes who've been writing for a golf magazine for 20 years, but were still Hall of Fame voters. I'm not a Hall of Fame voter. I didn't get to cast a ballot for Tim. And so those people started disappearing from the rolls because the BBWA changed. And then you brought in people who were my age or younger who understood advanced stats and understood Raines' impact. And so I think that he would have had a pretty good chance if I literally was never born, because momentum started turning in his favor, that people started recognizing the type of player that he was, an on-base percentage and walks and stolen bases and doubles play, and you don't need to have 100 RBIs every year or whatever. And once that happened, Keith Law talked about him and Rob Nyer talked about him and people like that. So I think the movement would have happened anyway. Maybe I was just more annoying and more vocal than most people, that's all. But I think that it was turning in his direction regardless.
Jonah, not to get completely sidetracked, but it does kind of fascinate me, and since we have you on the phone, I looked at Carlos Delgado's numbers here in Toronto, and now he disappeared from the ballot in like a blink of an eye. And me not being completely versed in the nuances of baseball or exactly where numbers thresholds have to be hit for a Hall of Fame, I was shocked by that. And I wonder if, maybe in this market we kind of missed the boat on that. And you look at what he put up here in Toronto, his best 10, 11 years were staggering in my mind, especially because he did it.
Oh, yeah.
As far as we know, he did it clean. I mean, there's never been a hint around him.
Right.
And then he goes to the Mets, and he was really good there for right up until he's retired, basically. And not that he maybe was should be in the Hall of Fame, but that he disappeared off the ballot still drives me nuts.
Yeah, I think that's fair. What you try to do, I'm going to speak from an advanced statistical point of view because that's kind of my forte. You're looking for comps, right? So you want to compare him to every first baseman who ever played, and then DH, I guess. And you also want to compare him to his era. And in his era, it's not just that there were a lot of great hitters. That's certainly true. It's not just that the offensive numbers were great. That's certainly true. It's that there were a lot of first basemen who can mash.
Right.
He's got to be – okay, let's forget about guys who may or may not have done stuff. Jim Thome, as far as we know, Jim Thome didn't do anything. He's in the same era. Frank Thomas is in the same era. It's tough. It's just because – Palmeiro was too. Palmeiro had other stuff around him. Mm-hmm. But it becomes a difficult thing. If you're going to do it fairly, you can't compare Delgado to Frank Mazeroski, because Mazeroski was a slick fielding second baseman who had his biggest moment in 1960. You need to compare him to Jim Thome and Frank Thomas and whatever, with an eye toward history, too. You're comparing him to Lou Gehrig and Jimmy Fox to some extent as well. And by that standard, once you adjust for era, which was a high offense era, it makes it difficult. Is it the case that some of the high offense era came from people who did things that were illicit? Sure, but it's also the case that just the offensive environment was higher. So I think he should have stayed on the ballot, absolutely. By the objective standards, and there's a stat called JAWS, which, to keep it short, is just basically looks at the average Hall of Famer at that position. Not the average player, but the average pitcher. So if you're saying, is Kershaw a Hall of Famer or not, you're literally looking at Walter Johnson and Sandy Koufax, as well as Curt Schilling and Mike Mussina, and saying, is he worthy? By that standard, Delgado would fall short, but not much short, such that he should have gotten 30% of the vote and stayed around a little while. So Kenny Lofton's the same, by the way. Kenny Lofton was off the ballot right away. Lou Whitaker was off the ballot right away. I can make a case for either of those guys in the Hall of Fame, and I could certainly make a case for them hanging around longer. Yeah, the voters, at the very least, missed the boat in not even giving him 5%. I thought that was silly.
Yeah, and Delgado, part of the era when the American League East was not up for grabs because we knew Boston and the Yankees were in complete control of it. Are we in danger of entering that kind of era now for the Blue Jays? It's a very... a slippery slope, I think, this offseason, because given that those two likely are going to be the teams to chase for a while.
Well, and the thing is, we need to kind of... first of all, the answer to your question is that's possible, but let's not confuse that with saying that it becomes impossible for the Jays, because why are the Yankees looking good for years to come? Is it that they're spending a lot of money? Not so much. It's that their best young players are young, that Severino and Judge and Sanchez and Didi and then later Frazier and Torres, these guys are young, either homegrown or acquired by a trade. Well, anybody can do that. And if you go back and look at the Yankees dynasty of the 90s, is it because they spend money? Not really. It's because Jeter and Posada and Mariano and Bernie Williams and all those guys headed, came up together, the core four, core five, really. So, that's Vlad. That's Bo Bichette. That's maybe Stroman and Sanchez if they're still around. You build success. Look at the Astros. The Astros got Verlander and all that stuff, but how do they win? Altuve's homegrown. Springer's homegrown. Correa's homegrown. Alex Bregman is homegrown. Dallas Keuchel's homegrown. You win championships with youth, and youth cannot be acquired in the free agent market. It needs to be done through drafting and player development, and the Jays can do that. And if you, we'll see if they succeed or not, but if you talk to Shabir and Atkins, they 100% have their eye on the prize. They're not looking at, older guys. They're not even looking at Josh Donaldson as being the savior of the franchise, even though I love Donaldson. They see it as the younger guys. To build consistent success, you need to have a loaded farm system and a loaded player development staff. And this will be a hard time right now. And yes, the Yankees and the Red Sox have more young talent, but the Jays could bottom out and get back and become a new Cubs or Astros within a few years anyway. So in the here and now, it's going to be tough. But as long as you have people who are committed to youth, which is that's the name of the game, and execute on it, I think that's fine. And so, yeah, tough stretch now, but we'll see Vlad, we'll see Bichette, and hopefully we'll see other Alford, we'll see other guys down the road.
Should the fact that the Yankees, I think what's scaring a lot of people about the Yankees is their youth got really good a lot faster than most people projected, and now of course they're still the Yankees. So you know what? Maybe we should go and see, talk to Derek about Giancarlo Stanton and see what we can do, or whatever other whatever else they might want to do in free agency. Similarly, Boston has the resources; we know that. And so should that reality, the fact that their young players are more advanced than Toronto's are now, and they're in the position to add, which is what made the Yankees so great for so long, was they could always add to their core. Should that inform what Shapiro Atkins do in this offseason?
Well, here's the thing about this offseason. Donaldson's a free agent after 2018, and if you look at this team, they made the LCS 1 year removed. Most of those guys are still there. Bautista's not that guy anymore, and Encarnacion is gone. But you just went through a season where the guy who led the league in ERA in 16 basically didn't pitch in 17. That's Sanchez. Osuna randomly turned into a pumpkin like 12 times during the course of the season. That's not going to happen again. There were just a lot of things that went wrong. And what you do when you're evaluating your team, maybe when you're evaluating your life, is you are realistic. You're talking about your own life and you say, oh, my dog's a jerk and he's going to bite this person. But okay, my son's not so bad. And all right, my job's going well. And okay, my mortgage is okay. You do a tally. And the Jays tally in 16, a lot of things went right. In 17, so many things went wrong. So that doesn't mean that you say, okay, I'm all in. I spent all my money on magic beans. But it means it's okay to say, all right, Donaldson's a free agent at 18. Let's see what we can do around the margins. Let's see if we can pick up a I'm making it up. Doug Pfister as a number five starter for a couple $1 million. You see what you can do within context. And they tried to do that after 16. Some of it worked, by the way. They extended Justin Smoke. I thought they were idiots. I roundly criticized that move. And you know what? I was super wrong. I also said that Kendrys Morales was a signing, bad signing. You know what? That was super right. Kendrys Morales is not good, and he's going to get worse. So you go and you figure things out between the raindrops, and you kind of go from there. So I think from that point of view, as long as they don't overextend themselves, I'm okay with them making a move here or there, with the recognition that their future does not necessarily lie with Donaldson. It lies with Vlad and Bichette and Alford and so on.
The can you walk us through Shohei Ohtani and, you know, this?
Yeah.
And at what advantage, if any, the Jays would have in pursuing him? And you know, I know it comes down to international signing bonus. It's not an open bidding war. So is there any realistic expectation that this guy could come and be both the starting pitcher or the pitcher they need and the outfielder they need in one fell swoop? Is it at all realistic?
Yeah, and I hate this stuff, not because I'm a Jays fan or not a Jays fan or a fan of another team, but because I just believe that people should be paid what they're worth, whether they're radio hosts or ball players. And Ohtani's not, because they basically rigged the system so that owners could save more money. Ohtani should be making, should get $185 million this offseason. That's it. We don't need all this stupid nonsense. And he's not, because of this international signing bonus thing. The Rangers and the Yankees are the two teams in order that have the highest slot money to do that. So it does become more difficult for any other team. And the Jays aren't in the top three or five, I don't think. It looks like they're not. So
is there any move they can make to add more slot money, or is that fixed now?
Maybe, but it's kind of it's very roundabout, and it doesn't really work that way. And other teams are wise to this too. Like, if the Jays know this, and every other team knows it. Right. So it's kind of, I think what you're going to end up with is status quo. So it seems unlikely that Ohtani would end up being a Blue Jay. And to the question about whether he's going to play both, that's an AL thing. I don't know that he's going to go be an everyday left fielder in the National League. It strikes me. I feel pretty confident that he's probably going to be an American League ball player, and then he'll pitch in DH. It's not as easy as you think. If you remember the movie Moneyball, but talking to Scott Hatterberg, and the actor who plays Ron Washington says, "Is it hard to learn first base?" And Billy Bean says, "No." And Ron Washington's character says, "Oh, it's incredibly hard." It is incredibly hard.
Yeah.
To be a major league caliber fielder is hard. So I think he's probably going to be a DH if he does it.
And what about the possibility, of playing both, which makes it so such an interesting story beyond his talent
at
each. But can he be in a position to demand that? Can he be in a position to have it written into a contract, like where two teams want him? One says you're not going to get to do both, and one says you can. But can he hold them to that?
Agents can kind of negotiate whatever they want, but you can't. I don't think that you could. That would create a weird precedent, right? Because then what if he pulls his hamstring and they want him to play left field? Like, you can't do that. So I think that you can kind of have a handshake deal, but I don't even know how you would codify that. It's not even so much a collective bargaining agreement issue. It's just how do two parties. It's like if you and I got together and said, every time we meet, we're going to have a burger with foie gras on it. That sounds super delicious, but you know what? Most restaurants don't have that on the menu, so I don't know where you go with that.
Yeah, no, it's tough. It's like, as I always think of kids getting recruited to go play somewhere, like R.J. Barrett, going to Duke, he's got to have a guaranteed that he's going to start or be able to contend for it. So anyway, we appreciate it. As always, Jonah, keep up the good work. We will talk to you down the road.
Thank you, fellas.